If you're listening on audio today, feel grateful because you don't have to look at my awful mustache that Camille is forcing me against my will to grow.
I'm going to cry.
Why?
Because I love your mustache so much.
Why do you like it so much? It looks awful.
I love it.
I should pixelate it out in the video.
It's cool.
It's not cool. It looks bad.
Makes you look all cool.
Can we get this over with?
Yeah.
Because I want to go dig our Minecraft hole.
Yeah, me too.
Camille and I have a Minecraft world, and it's great. And we play on it, like, every other night.
But the only thing that we do when we play on our Minecraft world isn't, like, build fancy structures or anything.
We want to build fancy structures, but...
We're just digging a really big hole.
Yeah, it's our distraction.
It's, like, really big. It's, like, 16 by 16.
It's a chunk for those...
Oh, the chunk. Sorry.
Jail.
Jail?
You can't dig the hole now.
I don't know what a chunk is.
I told you what a chunk is.
Yeah, but I forgot on purpose. It's like, listen, let me brag. We've dug like 15,000 blocks out of our hole. Like, we've been digging this hole.
We have like 6 chests full of stone and other blocks. Anyway,
it's awesome. Okay. All right. Welcome to Gallery. We'll stop talking about our Minecraft hole.
Yeah.
So we can get back to digging it after
it
this.
It is awesome, though.
It is awesome.
It's a great hole.
If you've never dug a hole with your partner, I suggest that you do so in Minecraft or in real life if you are into hole digging.
We would be like an hour and a half into our hole. And I'm like, Camille, do you want to like do something else? And she's like, no. She says it just like that.
It's because you get into your like the zone and you're just like, your like finger hurts because you've been clicking on the dig for a while. And
you've been holding it down?
Yeah, and we're listening to McKay's 30s playlist. You know how we do.
Yeah, baby.
And I could dig that hole for hours.
It's a good time. It's therapeutic.
Yeah, it is.
You also have ADHD, so it's like perfect for you.
Out me? Expose me?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, let's get started.
Let's get started.
What are you doing today?
A film. I've never done a film.
It's the Emoji Movie.
It is not the Emoji Movie. It's
kind of
similar.
Then can we end this?
So we can dig the hole? Okay. I gotta fix my hoodie strings. Okay.
I don't know that movie.
Okay. I'm talking about a film that I care about a lot. Okay. And that I really love. And I think is so underrated.
The Iron Giant.
No.
Oh. Give me a hint.
I love that movie, though. It's my favorite movie, The Iron Giant.
Give me a hint.
It's animated. So it is animated.
Give me
hints. She heard that I liked the movie and she's like, it's animated, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
You just knew it was animated. I don't know what else to say about it without giving it away. Because this is a distinct... Did I have something on my face?
Yeah, you did.
Thanks. This is a water bottle. Sorry.
Can you
grab my water bottle.
Can you get to the point?
I'm trying to get to the point.
It's taking you forever.
I'm trying to get to the point, but like...
You had to drink your water right then.
I had to drink my water, and I just don't know what to say about this movie without giving it away.
Okay.
I think it has one of the most unique and special messages of any movie I've ever seen.
The Emoji Movie.
Can you give that up, please?
Give me the first letter.
No. That's...
All right,
what
no
are you
hints.
Talking about?
No hints.
Well, the first word is the... I'm not.
Your hints suck today. You're a bad hint
the
giver.
Only hints I've ever given you is it starts with the, and your only guess is the Emoji Movie.
Yeah, or the Ice Age.
That's not what it's called.
I love the Ice
it's
Age.
It's called just called Ice Age. No, when you say you love the Ice Age, you sound like you're talking about the real life Ice Age, like millions of years
ago.
I
love the Ice Age.
The Paleolithic era. Actually, that I would say something like that because I love the Paleolithic era of people. Don't look at the camera like that.
All right, guess mine.
I know yours is a book.
Starts with the...
The Road.
Actually, it doesn't start with the... I'm really sorry I led you stray like that.
Is it... have I read it? I haven't read a lot of
I have
books.
No idea, actually.
Is it a big... Is it popular?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like everybody like read it or saw it.
Is
and
it Percy
stuck
Jackson?
With them. No.
Dang.
Everybody's read that. That's a law.
They read it and it stuck with them. Harry Potter?
No. Think elementary school or middle school.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
You wish. It's a little bit scary. Actually, it's very scary.
Goosebumps.
No. It is. Okay, I'm just going to start.
Okay, talk about it. Yeah.
It is. Get ready for this. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I was going
to
guess that. Oh, man. What? Okay. Oh, my gosh. I was going to guess
that.
Have
you read it?
Yeah, dude. I read those books in elementary school.
I didn't.
They were so scary.
I don't really remember
much about them, though. I'm trying to see if I remember any stories.
Here's what I remember about them.
I remember the covers.
No, literally.
Those covers were horrifying.
So these books are in like elementary schools and middle schools and stuff. Wait,
how is Harry Potter banned but not these? Okay, sorry.
More on that. Just wait. So these books, for those of you who don't know, it's called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And I have picked...
What's it about? What's the content of the book? I have no idea from that title. That was funny.
Happy Stories to Tell in the Light.
Happy Stories to Tell in the Light.
So I'm going to talk about Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones. It's the third. There's three books.
What's the cover on that one?
They're
because I know them because of the covers.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Of course you would know them by the art. Little artist boy, little nerd, little idiot, little dumb.
Wait, what idiot?
But so these are collections of short stories that the author Alvin Schwartz put together. He used a lot of like real stuff, like folklore, to put it together. He did a ton of research. He talked to a ton of like professors and everything like that. And a lot of this also came from his own imagination. Like he adapted them to be for kids and to make them super modernized.
Oh, they're specific. It's intentionally for kids.
Or for middle school audience, you know? I know.
Really?
I know.
Wow.
I know. And so
that's funny.
They are truly chilling stories in these books. They're scary. They're definitely scary stories. It's all in the dark. And the one thing I remember about them is because I was always kind of a baby growing up. And the one thing I remember is like seeing other kids in like elementary school check it out from the library and being like, whoa.
Yeah.
They're so brave.
What was it about elementary school that was like scary things or like?
They're like, oh,
like,
you're
so
cool. Old.
And or like, you can handle scary books. When in reality, it's like, well, they're still scary, but like.
My mom made me stop reading the Animorphs series because she said it gave me nightmares.
Have you seen those covers?
That's
those Animorphs covers are scary.
I loved Animorphs.
Did you know that there was an Animorphs TV series?
Really?
Yeah.
Was it weird?
What? I don't know. I didn't watch it. I saw a couple clips on YouTube, but the alien guy who's like a deer with slits for his nose and he has like six eyes.
Oh.
Doesn't he talk a certain way in the books?
Biblically accurate Animorphs character.
No, but like, doesn't he like, isn't the book written like in a certain way that like makes him talk weird? Isn't like the font's like Wingdings or something?
What the? I don't know.
Okay. Please go back to what you were saying.
So.
I also read Junie B. Jones.
I went hard
Magic
on Junie
Tree
B.
House.
Jones.
Did you read Magic Treehouse?
I did. Can you focus?
Sorry.
Who has ADHD in this?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to read you one of the stories.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty short. It's only a page, two pages. So it might take a couple minutes. So audio listeners.
Grab a snack.
Pretend you're listening to your Audible subscription. Three-month free trial.
Lay on your stomach with your chin in your hands.
And your feet up behind you, wiggling.
And
that's how I want you to listen to this. I'll do my best audiobook voice. Okay.
Chapter one.
This is called...
Or not chapters,
this
but...
This is a famous one. This is called Harold. And I would argue that it is the most famous from the trilogy.
How scary is it? Do we need a disclaimer?
It's pretty scary.
All right, disclaimer. Scary.
Pretty scary. Disclaimer, scary. Okay. Okay. Harold. When it got hot in the valley, Thomas and Alfred drove their crowd. I already messed up. Their crowd.
That's the episode.
All right, ready? When it got hot in the valley, Thomas and Alfred drove their cows up to a cool green pasture in the mountains to graze. Usually they stayed there with the cows for 2 months. Then they brought them down to the valley again. The work was easy enough, but oh, it was boring. All day, the two men tended their cows. At night, they went back to the tiny hut where they lived. They ate supper and worked in the garden and went to sleep. It was always the same. Then Thomas had an idea that changed everything. Let's make a doll the size of a man, he said. It would be fun to make, and we could put it in the garden to scare the birds.
Already.
like a scarecrow.
Why'd they say doll? Okay, keep going.
It should look like Harold, Alfred said. Harold was a farmer they both hated. They made a doll out of old sacks stuffed with straw. They gave it a pointy nose like Harold's and tiny eyes like his. Then they added dark hair and a twisted frown. Of course, they gave it Harold's name. Each morning...
Rude.
Me when I hate Harold.
imagine like you find like a doll of yourself that looks horrible. And then you're like, what is this?
No, see,
like,
wait.
Okay.
See what they do to the doll. Each morning on their way to the pasture, they tied Harold to a pole in the garden to scare away the birds. Each night, they brought him inside so he wouldn't get ruined if it rained. When they were feeling playful, they would talk to him. One of them might say, how are the vegetables growing today, Harold?
I don't like where this is going.
Then the other, making believe he was Harold, would answer in a crazy voice, very slowly. They both would laugh, but not Harold. Whenever something went wrong, they took it out on Harold.
It's going to come to life. It's going to come to life and kill them.
They would curse at him, even kick or punch him. Sometimes one of them would take the food they were eating, which they both were sick of, and smear it on the doll's face. How do you like that stew, Harold? He would ask. Well, you better eat it, or else. Then the two men would howl with laughter. One night, after Thomas had wiped Harold's face with food, Harold grunted. Did you hear that? Alfred asked.
Gosh, oh no.
It was Harold, Thomas said. I was watching him when it happened. I can't believe it. How could he grunt? Alfred said. He's just a sack of straw. It's not possible. Let's throw him in the fire, Thomas said, and that will be that. Let's not do anything stupid, said Alfred.
Thomas got spooked. He already wants to throw him in the fire.
We don't know what's going on. When we move the cows down, we'll leave him behind. For now, let's just keep an eye on him. So they left Harold sitting in the corner of the hut. They didn't talk to him or take him outside anymore. Now and then, the doll grunted, but that was all. After a few days, they decided there was nothing to be afraid of. Maybe a mouse or some insects had gotten inside Harold and were making those sounds.
That's how they get you, man.
If a doll was grunting, I would get rid of that thing.
If a doll was grunting, I would throw it into a fire and then I would put it. You know how Yzma in Emperor's New Groove is like, I'll turn him into a flea and then I'll put him in a box and I'll mail myself the box and then I'll kill him or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
I would do that, but like with bad things.
Okay.
Weapons. Okay, keep on. I already don't like where this is going.
So Thomas and Alfred went back to their old ways. Each morning they put Harold out in the garden and each night they brought him back into the hut. When they felt playful, they joked with him. When they felt mean, they treated him as badly as ever. Then, one night, Alfred noticed something that frightened him. Harold is growing, he said. I was thinking the same thing, Thomas said. Maybe it's just our imagination, Alfred replied. We've been up here on this mountain for too long.
Oh my gosh.
The next morning, while they were eating, Harold stood up and walked out of the hut. He climbed up on the roof and trotted back and forth like a horse on its hind legs. That's the scariest part for me. All day and all night, he trotted like that. In the morning, Harold climbed down and stood in a far corner of the pasture. The men had no idea what he would do next. They were afraid. They decided to take the cows down into the valley the same day. When they left, Harold was nowhere in sight. They felt as if they had escaped a great danger and began joking and singing. And when they had gone only a mile or two, they realized they had forgotten to bring the milking stools.
Oh no.
Neither one wanted to go back for them, but the stools would cost a lot to replace. There really is nothing to be afraid of, they told one another. After all, what could a doll do? They drew straws to see which one would go back. It was Thomas. I'll catch up with you, he said. And
Thomas
Alfred,
is dead.
Alfred walked Thomas toward the valley. When Alfred came to a rise in the path, he looked back for Thomas. He did not see him anywhere, but he did see Harold. The doll was on the roof of the hut again. As Alfred watched, Harold kneeled and stretched out a bloody skin to dry in the sun.
That's the end?
That's the end.
Hey, Thomas is dead.
He got skinned.
Oh my gosh. I know. Oh my gosh, that's awful.
I know.
This is a kid's book.
This is a reason why I didn't check it out at the elementary school library.
Holy.
Because I was not man enough for this. I'm still barely man enough for this.
That's wild. Oh.
I know. So... I did some research on this. A lot of my research came from, so Cody Mayrick made a documentary about it.
Interesting.
And so there's a whole documentary about these books.
Interesting, okay.
And there's a lot to say on them because they've had a lot of trouble with like getting banned and like people not wanting them in schools.
Oh, okay.
And stuff like that, as you could imagine.
Oh my gosh.
And so this particular story comes from an Austrian Swiss tale. And in that area, there's lots of folklore that surrounds this kind of like doll coming back to life and stuff. And you can find every version of this story for whatever one you want it to come from. Like the one that the author, like Alvin Schwartz, got it from was like an old, what's it called? One of those cautionary tales. It was a Christian.
Aesop fable.
Isn't that what it is? I was looking for cautionary tale.
I could be wrong.
It was a Christian one. And so in the original story, the boys were being mean, smearing food on him. And then they baptized him without authority. And that's what made the doll come to life and be evil and kill them.
Oh my gosh, that's so serious and dark.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the story was like, you can't baptize without authority, or that's not God's commandments, and that's how you get in trouble.
That's so interesting.
And so that's what it was. And there's, you know, there's some on like revengeful wives, like attacking their mean husbands and stuff. Like there's some for every genre.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing the lengths that people will go to like, cautionary tales, like the lengths that people will go to, like whether it's like the stained glass windows of Gothic architectures helping the like illiterate people of Europe like learn gospel principles, or whether it's the running gag in Arrested Development where to get their kids to learn lessons, they like make their dad like fake lose his arm. It's just like what is it about scaring that just like makes us like fear motivated controller or persuasion, I should say.
Yeah.
Wild.
And even in this one, it's a cautionary tale really against bullying.
Yeah.
Like it's subtext.
What I was gonna say, bullying, yeah.
But yeah. And it seems like a lot of the tales in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark are cautionary tales against being mean to foreigners and outsiders and bullying and that kind of thing. They all kind of revolve around that. And so they are cautionary tales in their own way.
What an interesting way to say that message.
But the weird part is that these books are like super famous. Everybody's read them. Everybody's heard of them.
There's a film. There's a film adaptation.
Guillermo del Toro.
He did those? Wait, Guillermo del Toro did those?
Yeah, he did.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know.
That's awesome. I love him.
I've never seen the film, but...
That homie is amazing.
I'm probably too scared to see the film.
His acceptance speech at the last Oscars was beautiful. Animation is cinema.
Amen.
Animation is cinema. Wow, okay. I gotta look that up. We gotta watch those. We're gonna be too busy watching the Five Nights at Freddy's movie on October 26th. On October 27th.
Yeah. I'm worried I'm going to be too scared for that, too.
Five Nights at Freddy's. Actually, we tried to play the first level of Five Nights at Freddy's where nothing happens and we couldn't do it because we were too scared.
We had to turn it off. We were like, do you want to just play the second
level
in the morning? We're like, maybe we could do it in the daylight, and then we gave it back to the library.
Yeah, we had rented it from the library. What a funny thing.
And so the interesting thing is that these books have been like... titled a cultural touchstone for generations, because there's like over 7 million copies sold. They were from the 90s, so there's a lot of people that love it, and there's a lot of people that hate it.
Interesting.
Particularly moms against anime boys, that group. I'm just kidding.
I was like, are you serious?
No.
How could you be against anime boys?
So this series is listed by the American Library Association as being the most challenged series of books from the 1990s and the 7th most challenged from the 2000s.
Interesting.
Meaning that lots of people want to ban it. But it's still in libraries today.
Really?
Yeah. No.
And I can't read Harry Potter.
There's two sides to it. One of them... the banning, the people who want to ban it say it they feature horrible topics such as murder, disfigurement, cannibalism, and skinning. They're sick, repulsive, really disgusting, not appropriate for children. The words devil, witchcraft, occult were also used. They compared the author to Jeffrey Dahmer. Everything.
Surely he's not that bad.
Everything.
Jeffrey Dahmer's bad. Like, dude.
And then there's the other side, which say they're aimed at middle school kids who are perfectly able to cope with this kind of thing. The stories help children deal with reality by putting faces on what they're afraid of. The children's fear doesn't go away just because they can't read about it. It's a tragic mistake to deprive a child of a book that will allow them to face and discuss the things that make them afraid. Repressing those fears only makes them more afraid.
May I ask what side you tend to adhere to?
Let's see. Let me give you one more quote, and then I'll tell you.
Great.
This is Betsy Johnson. Schwartz, the daughter of the author. She said, "My dad was really proud of how many people tried to ban it. It meant the books were relevant. People were paying attention. It was great publicity."
All press is good press, right?
he used to joke, "When I die, I want my New York Times obituary to say I had some of the most banned books in America."
That's awesome.
And so, here's the question that I pose to you.
Okay, great.
How do you decide what's appropriate for kids, and how do you decide to ban books from libraries?
Man, that is such a loaded question. There's so much to that.
We can just talk about this book if you want. Simplify it.
My initial thoughts are, I don't know. I think I tend to adhere with the second point of view. I think there's good points in both of them. Because honestly, there is art and media out there that is not uplifting, that is not good for kids. Is all of it divided into gory horror and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, funny comics, joy times? No, I don't think. For me, it seems like it's more of a case-by-case basis thing, which might be what it is right now, but I don't know. I think that it just depends. I kind of lost my train of thought, though. What was I trying to say? That, like, it's so much more than just this book is bad for kids and this book is good for kids. It's so much more nuanced. There's so many more factors. Because personally, I would say that Harry Potter's fine and...
Wizardry.
Yeah. Like, that's my personal opinion, and I don't know. What do you think?
I think there's a lot to say on it, too. I think that you can go really wrong with kids' books, and you can really scare a lot of kids and put some bad ideas in their heads and everything like that.
Yeah.
But for this book, I think it's okay, and I'm glad it's in libraries.
I agree. I think that if you shield kids from anything, like, scary or something that will make them feel like a challenging emotion... You know, that's not good, because it's how we grow, is to be challenged and to feel fear and to feel conflict. I'm not saying that there's stuff that isn't objectively bad that we shouldn't let our kids, like, see or something.
Yeah, I think some level of shielding is very good.
Yeah, obviously there's stuff that, like, you shouldn't, like, let in libraries or let kids know. But also I think that there are things that's going to scare them, and there are things that, like, Harry Potter scared my sister. Like, I don't know. It's different for every kid, and so...
Which sister?
I don't want to say, but you know who you are.
That makes sense.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. We'll be hearing about that.
Well, I was actually thinking about your sisters when I was thinking about this, because for someone like me, if I were to run across this book as an 8-year-old, it would, like... traumatize me.
Totally.
Like, I am not the audience for this book, because I'm such a baby. But if, like, your sister Shay,
yeah,
who loves horror, appreciates it so well, knows the art, like, value.
Well, not only does she appreciate, yeah, she knows the art value. She respects it as
she loves
a beautiful
it, yeah.
medium, and I agree with her.
And I feel like this kind of book would be, like, a thrill for her to read as an 8-year-old.
It probably was. I think she did read it, honestly. But that's such a good point. It depends. It's different for everybody. And
that's why I feel like the option to have it in libraries is a good one. Because it also teaches kids discretion. You know?
Oh, that's such a good point.
Because I saw those books. I saw how cool people read them. And I decided not to read them because I knew it wouldn't work for me. And I made that decision as a kid.
Kids are much more mature than we realize.
I was busy reading Percy Jackson.
She was busy reading Percy Jackson.
Everybody was.
Yeah. Did you ever read Michael Vay?
Yeah. It's pretty good. Is that the only book you've ever read other than Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
No.
What's another book?
The Hobbit? I'm not done with that one yet. I read The Road, kind of. Anyway.
He only read The Road because I read it aloud to him.
Is that so bad? Is that the worst thing in the world?
No.
Okay.
All right. That's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
What a great point you made. What a great discussion. And
What a scary story.
What a scary story. And... it was beautifully said, as always.
I know.
And I just think that you made some great points. Really made me think about what is portrayed in art, to kids, to everybody, and how, you know, discretion is advised, and how we should have art that says everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shouldn't just have...
It's all important.
It's all important, and to some degree, everything has a purpose.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I feel so uplifted by that.
By my awful, horrible story.
Yeah, well, I just feel uplifted by your thoughts because it just makes me think, and that was eloquently said.
You should go, after this, you should research some of the art in it.
Yeah.
That's something that I haven't talked on. Yeah, I didn't talk on that today, but there's a lot of conversation on his art, and it was even temporarily removed from the book for a period of time.
It's pretty disturbing.
It's super disturbing. And so there's art of Harold, the story. It shows a scarecrow, and it's just it's pretty scary. So
wow, okay.
If you're into that, go ahead and look it up.
If you're not, don't.
They're not like awful.
Yeah,
but you're scary.
If you want, it's up to you. Discretion.
Okay, you go.
I love that every episode, except for the first one of the podcast, we have picked like duality.
You do in a happy story to tell in the light?
I am doing a happy story to tell in the light. This
it's
movie,
October. You're not supposed to do happy stories. Okay, sorry.
Oh, yeah? Then what's... It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, huh?
Is that what you're doing?
No.
Because it doesn't start with the...
Our Halloween episode is... Our Halloween special is the next episode.
And it's going to be special.
It's going to be special. Because we're each picking five
topics.
I'm
going to murder McKay.
What?
Huh?
What? Don't say that.
Sorry.
Okay, so what I was saying is, like, every episode, like, since, like, the second episode, you did, like, a dark, like...
Greed.
Like, you did Greed, a silent film, and I did Ancient Egypt, where this weird guy did, like, a weird thing for a while. And then the last episode, you did Candy Crush, a cute game with, like, candy canes and pop
samples.
And I did Joji, Glimpse of Us, a song about never being satisfied with who you are. And today you're doing Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, where a scarecrow skins a man.
Yeah.
And I am talking about the Lego Movie.
I love the Lego Movie.
I know. I love the Lego Movie,
gosh!
Too. Ready to listen.
I got my listening ears on.
Oh, my gosh. What a special
Lego Movie.
Movie this is. I don't want to sound like... Please, like, make fun of me if you want.
Okay.
But when I rewatched the movie... For to talk about it.
Wait, you rewatched it without me?
I couldn't, because then you would suspect something. No, wait. But when I rewatched it, I teared up at the end.
Really?
It's...
I think I definitely cried.
The message is remarkable. And that's why I want to talk about it, because mainly for the message. But I kind of want to go over some fun facts. I'm definitely going to talk about the animation. And that's it. I thought I had more to list, but like I'll go through the plot too.
Lego animation is incredible.
Well, that's the thing is, well, great. I'm glad you brought that up, because this movie was truly a pioneer in like what you can do with animation. What I really like. So if you haven't seen the movie, it looks like a stop motion animated feature with Legos.
Like, I truly don't know if it is or not. Is it?
So the sets are all built in real life with real
Legos?
Lego bricks. With real Lego bricks.
Wow.
I'll skip into the fun facts. So the sets in the movie, there are almost 4 million unique Lego bricks in the whole movie. Some are reused in scenes, but if you wanted to recreate the movie in real life, which you can do, because every single brick is a real Lego brick with real colors that are printed at the Lego factory.
Oh my gosh.
If you wanted to recreate it, it would take 15 million Lego bricks.
Oh, wow.
And that's how they animated this movie. So they had real life Lego built sets, I think. And then all of the characters were animated with CG, but they look so real. And here's why they look real. One is because the rendering of this movie uses a software or an algorithm called ACES.
ACES.
ACES Color Encoding System, which means that with the camera that they're using, the camera, it allows for more f-stops. So basically what that means is better
frames
light.
Frames per second?
More, no.
Oh.
Like more light, I think. Photography people help me out.
Smaller aperture.
Not quite. I think, maybe. Let me finish.
Sorry.
So it means that the lighting is more realistic.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why it looks realistic, is because the lighting looks real.
Cool.
Yeah. The bricks look translucent because there's sunlight pouring through them. There's reflections everywhere. It is amazing how good this movie looks. another way that it looks real is the frame rate. They turn the frame rate down from a perfect 24 to probably, I don't know exactly, but so it looks like that stop motion, kind of choppy, but still smooth look.
Great.
And then the other thing is the imperfections on the characters. That's what's so interesting about this movie. When you show me the scratches on Buzz Lightyear's armor, when you show me the fringes on Mr. Polo's Incredible,
Mr. Polo's Incredible.
When you show me the fringes on Mr. Incredible's polo, I say, okay, because I know that that's a not real world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're animating with real Lego bricks and you put the imperfections that they put in the characters on this movie, it looks so much better because I'm like, it looks real. Like, these are real bricks. You're telling me that they're real bricks, and some of them are real bricks.
Wait, what do you mean imperfections?
So, like, you can see the little, like, crease in the plastic hair where, like, it got cut out of the mold in the factory.
Cool.
You can see fingerprints on all of the bricks.
Cool.
There's scratches. One of the first shots in the movie is the main character, I'll get to it in a second, Emmett's face. It looks like it was printed on with ink. It is one of the coolest, most beautiful looking movies I've ever watched. And these imperfections that they added just make it look all the more real.
Yeah. I guess, like, if I'm thinking about, like, the greatest animation that I've ever seen of all time, the Lego movie doesn't really come to mind. Because
yeah, because it looks like real life.
That's how good it is.
But
yeah.
But it's fully animated.
Wow.
With CG graphics.
That's impressive.
It is amazing.
It makes me think of that one guy who, the Across the Spider-Verse movie.
Same thing. He used the same thing, basically.
Yeah, there's a YouTuber that did Lego animation, and he was just so good at YouTubing it that they hired him for the movie, and he did his section.
Yeah, in Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
There's a Lego section, and a 14-year-old animated it.
So
I love
awesome.
Animation. I love animation. You would never find this in a live-action movie. Okay, one more fun fact that I didn't touch on with the animation was, one more thing that makes it look realistic is the depth of field.
Hmm.
Things that are close to the characters are really out of focus. Why? Because it's miniature. Legos are small. You're not going to have everything be in focus. You're going to, if you want it to look miniature, you film it like a miniature.
Cool.
So cool. Anyway, one more fun fact is there are 183 unique minifigures. And if you don't know what minifigures are, they're Lego people.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So before I get to the plot and the message, which is the main point that I'm trying to make and what I really want to talk about, is this movie is so good. Like, other than the animation, the writing is hilarious.
Okay, wait, can I say something on that?
Please.
When I went to the theater, so I went to the Lego movie and I loved it.
It's so good.
And I went to Lego Batman in theaters after that because I was like, the Lego movies are good. And I like sob cried.
It's
through the intro. It was like the first 5 minutes of the movie in Lego Batman. And I was like sobbing. And everybody around me was like, shut up.
They are, I kid you not, it might be one of, if not the funniest animated movie I've ever seen.
It's genuinely funny. It's not like slapstick Fortnite dance funny.
It's like self-aware.
It's self.
Like, just... Oh, and the way it's edited anyway. And so the writing is great. The casting is perfect. Chris Pratt as Emmett is just amazing.
I feel like that's Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds is
like
the everyman.
True.
Chris Pratt is like the most basic, like beige, generic, like actor
in
the world.
And this is my favorite performance from him.
Yeah.
Next to Andy Dwyer from Parks and Recreation.
He didn't like
kills
Star-Lord?
It in this movie. Oh, well, Star-Lord too, but like, he really brings his A-game
he
in.
He does.
It's goofy Chris Pratt turned to
you
the
didn't
max.
Like Mario?
Can you stop?
Okay. Hey, this is the only actor I know, so I'm like,
that's
milking
true, yeah.
it.
But the casting is so good. The main villain is voiced by Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And if you want a goofy, like, cartoony villain, I will talk about that. Don't say anything about it. Okay. Let me talk about the plot.
Okay.
It's a great movie. Please go see it. So the plot is that Lord Business, who's like...
That's my boss's
in
name.
His city, in his city, he's known as President Business. He's the president of the city, and he's this great diplomat. But he's actually... He has this alter ego where he has a giant horn with coffee mugs at the end.
See, that's everybody's CEO for real.
Yeah, and so his cover is like this big evil boss, and like all of his workers are robots, and there's and so he's that's Lord Business, and he's all about perfection and being normal. So he wants to make so the problem is that there's all of these master builders who are these super creative, amazing Lego people who keep building amazing things. And President Business, Lord Business, doesn't want it that way. He wants things to stay the same. And he has a super secret weapon called the Craggle. And what the Craggle is, it's super glue. Spoiler alert. It's super glue. It's crazy glue, but the letters are scratched off, so it looks like Craggle.
So funny.
So funny. So he has the Craggle. And he wants to freeze everything in place so nothing gets messed up. Nobody's building anything weird. Everything is exactly the way he wants it. Okay?
That's how I am.
It's true. No. So there's Vitruvius, this old wizard guy who's voiced by Morgan Freeman. He makes this prophecy of someone called the Special. The Special is going to stop Lord Business by finding the Piece of Resistance, which is this powerful relic, and it's just the lid to crazy glue.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that's going to stop the Craggle. He makes this prophecy of the Special, who's this incredibly interesting person. He even says that he's like, someone's so interesting. Anyway, who's going to stop Lord Business? That's the prophecy. Enter Emmett. Emmett is the main character, and I kid you not, his entire character is a guy. Literally.
He's the most guy of all guys.
He is the most normal, bottom-of-the-line, default guy ever. He has the default brown Lego hair. He has the default Lego face that's just two dots and a like a parentheses, basically.
Yeah.
His character is meant to be the most basic, by-the-numbers dude ever. And they show us he likes the sports team and the most popular song they always play. He goes with the flow. He's a total cog in the machine.
You.
What? He's a total pushover. He does, and he's so obsessed with the instructions.
Mm.
The instructions that come with like Lego. Like he always was holding them and he's always doing things by the instructions. His entire morning routine is a step-by-step process dictated by these instructions that Lord Business has put in place. So Emmett finds the Piece of Resistance. He's the Special. Okay? And he gets captured by the enemy and they kind of interrogate him and they're like, you put on this cover of being a totally uninteresting person and that's amazing, but we know you're the Special. And they play a video of his peers, of Emmett's peers talking about him, and they're like, we don't know that guy. They're his coworkers and they're like, we don't know him. Like, he's boring. There's nothing special about him. That's Emmett's whole thing. There's nothing special about him. So
real, man.
Emmett gets found and rescued by Wild Style.
That hot Lego girl.
You know that meme where the guy's looking up in Target and he's like, you look lonely. I can fix that. And it's the Lego head winking. Anyway, Wild Style finds Emmett and she's like, you're the Special. You're going to save everything. You're going to save us from Lord Business. And then she's like, you can drop the act of being an everyman with me. Like, it's totally cool. And she's like, build something amazing. And he's like, I can't. I don't have instructions. I've never built anything in my life. And she finds out that he's not the Special and he is the most normal, uninteresting guy. And she freaks out. She's like, oh my gosh, how are we supposed to stop Lord Business with this guy who's supposed to have amazing creative ideas? There's a scene that's one of the best scenes in the movie where they go into Emmett's head and it's completely empty. It's devoid. Like, there's nothing there.
You know that Mario playlist with all of the like Mario songs, and it's like no brain, head empty, only Mario Kart.
Yeah, but there's not even Mario Kart in Emmett's head.
Wow.
The one idea that he has is a double-decker couch, and everybody thinks that idea is stupid.
It's awesome.
But like in the universe, everybody thinks it's dumb.
Yeah.
And literally, like, Wild Style is like, that's literally the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
Rude.
Anyway.
Mommy.
So they group the master builders together and they're all of these amazing people like Abraham Lincoln and a Ninja Turtle and Gandalf. Like, they're all these amazing people that have such amazing like talents. And Emmett, this normal guy, is supposed to save them from Lord Business. And they're all like, you can't save us from Lord Business. You're so normal. Anyway, let me get to the point. So Emmett and a few other master builders escape. So that all the master builders get captured by Lord Business, except for Emmett and a handful of them. And they escape by boat, and they're trying to get away. And eventually their ship blows up and they're stranded in the ocean. But the only thing that didn't get destroyed or captured by Lord Business and his goons was the double-decker couch.
Yeah.
Which Emmett and all of his friends were hiding in. So what, and why it didn't get captured was because Lord Business thought it was the dumbest, most mundane, normal idea ever. He didn't think it was interesting or had to do with a master builder. So he passed right by it.
Mm.
Emmett's dumb idea was exactly what they needed.
Mm.
So it wasn't a good idea. It wasn't an amazing creative idea that a master builder would come up with, but it was what they needed. And it was what saved them. Isn't that cool?
Whoa, dude, I'm thinking.
So Emmett has this pattern. He doesn't build amazing things like the master builders. Because there's scenes where they literally build like a plane in 2 seconds. They build like a rocket ship in 2 seconds because they can just see the pieces and they put it together like that. Emmett's ideas is the double-decker couch, and they miss a wheel. So Emmett puts a wheel on his head and uses himself as the wheel because his head spins. Dumb ideas, but they're what works in the moment.
Yeah.
So
you're saying that my idea to put peanut butter on both sides of the bread is really good?
No, I what? What?
What?
Let's move on.
It's a good idea. And so, anyway, I came up with it.
Emmett has, so they're stranded. You're so funny.
Thanks.
Emmett has, so they're stranded. They don't know what to do. They have to still stop Lord Business. They have to get the piece of resistance onto the Craggle so Lord Business doesn't freeze everybody with super glue. And Emmett's plan, he's like, guys, you are all so talented, but you guys can't work together. But I'm a construction worker. When I work together with people, we could build a skyscraper. He says, your ideas are good, but I have an idea. Who would know everything about Lord Business? Emmett, who just conforms to everything that Lord Business puts out.
True.
So how do they infiltrate Lord Business? They don't build a cool master builder spaceship. They build a normal looking one.
Ah.
They build a ship that looks exactly like one of the company's ships.
Uh-huh.
Okay. When they go in, they don't fight and do all this cool stuff. They blend in with the robot workers.
Normal.
They be normal.
Normal core.
Exactly. So eventually, so this plan is going really good, and to no fault of their own, they all fail.
Mm-hmm.
They all get captured.
The climax of the story.
Yes. And Vitruvius dies. But yeah.
Morgan Freeman?
Yeah. But Vitruvius comes back and they're just so down in the dumps. And before Vitruvius dies, he reveals that he made the prophecy up. There's no special. There's no one who's special, who's destined to stop the Craggle. It was all a lie.
I feel like I'm watching the movie right now because I don't remember any of this. And I'm like, oh, no way.
Yeah. So Emmett, I guess after all, was not special. He was not meant for anything.
But he was meant for this.
But he was. Because Ghost Vitruvius comes and speaks to Emmett while they're in captivity. He says, the reason I made up the prophecy was because I knew that whoever found the piece could become the special.
Ah.
Because the only thing anyone needs to be special is to believe that you can be.
The potential to be.
Yeah. I know that sounds like a cat poster, but it's true. That's what Vitruvius says. He says, look what you did when you believed you were special.
Ooh.
And that part kind of made me tear up. You just need to believe it some more. So the message, the question I want to pose to you is, do you think this movie is made for kids or adults?
Both.
I would argue that it was made specifically for adults in mind.
Really?
And I'll talk about that in a second when I talk about the ending.
Okay.
The message of the movie told through Emmett is that you don't have to be special to be special. Even if you can't draw or play the piano or are really good at sports, or even if you can't build a spaceship out of Legos like that, even if you're not as amazing or creative as everyone around you, even if you're just normal, you are still special. You still have ideas that people need.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only thing anyone needs to be special is to believe that they can be.
Dang.
It wasn't an amazing master build that got them so far. It was Emmett's lame, normal ideas. You can be special even if you're, quote, not special. You are needed even if you're not a master builder.
I feel so inspired. I need to go do something great.
So that's why I think this movie is specifically made for adults. Because I would say that adults are people who are feeling low and feeling like they're a cog in the machine and they have nothing to offer and they just do whatever, like, and they aren't creative.
Yeah.
But you are. If you believe that you can be.
I am. I believe I can be.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the ending of this movie because this ending is what makes it the coolest message ever.
Dude, the ending shook me.
The ending is insane. So Lord Business takes the piece of resistance off of Emmett's back and flings it into this portal. Emmett goes after it. That portal was to the real world. And you find out that the entire movie was happening in this huge Lego set in this dude's basement. And everything that was happening was a kid playing with these Legos. So this kid is playing and someone starts coming down the stairs. It's a guy in a suit. Who is it?
Will Ferrell.
It's Will Ferrell, the voice of Lord Business. So you find out that Lord Business is a metaphor for the real life Will Ferrell, who comes to his son and is like, you can't play with this. This is dad's stuff. This is an intricate brick locking system. These are my collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's like, we bought it at the toy store. Like, I don't know, like these are toys. And he's like, stop, this is dad's stuff. I'm going to put it the way that I want. And so he starts super gluing everything down.
Dang.
And while this is happening, it keeps transitioning in between the real world and the Lego world. And Wildstyle gives this speech to everybody in the city that you are special, that even if you're just a person, you can use your creativity. And everyone in the city makes these cool spaceships and they start fighting off the machines that are shooting Craggle at everything and that are shooting super glue at everything.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. And eventually the dad sees his kid and he sees this childlike imagination and he ends up just playing with his kid. And he realizes that Legos are about creativity and Legos are about being special. So the same message of the movie that you can be special is the same message that Lego poses. You can build whatever you want. You can be special. Whether your build is to be a flower pot that sits on a shelf or a spaceship that your kids play with, you made it. You're creative. And that's the Lego movie.
And that brings us to our sponsor, Lego.
Lego. No.
That's beautiful.
But it's like a commercial for Lego. It's a product placement movie.
Yeah, it really
but
is.
But it's done in such a meaningful way. It is, in my opinion, one of the best animated films of all time. It's in the top 10. Easy.
And do you think that comes equally because of like animation and story? Or do you think the story?
Oh, totally. It was a benchmark for animation. It was a benchmark for storytelling, in my opinion. I've just never seen a message like that in a movie done so well.
Yeah.
Like, the story is laid out in a way to tell the message perfectly. Like, everything happens so that Emmett can fix it. It's so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And guess how many Oscar nominations it got?
None.
Zero.
Woof.
Stupid Academy. Anyway.
But you forgot. Animation is for kids.
No. Hang on. Anyway. So the point I'm trying to make is that this movie is for adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to say to an adult, hey, you are still creative. You can play with Legos. Don't get so wrapped up in conformity and you know, thinking, you know, I'm not creative. You are.
Dang. I think there's something really special about movies that are able to, like, uplift.
Yeah,
like,
it's so
like
uplifting.
Really, like, almost make you a better person and
yeah,
make you
totally
believe in yourself
does.
More, make you have a little bit more self-confidence. Like,
absolutely.
Change your life in a good way. And there's a lot of movies out there that are just solely for entertainment purposes only, which is awesome.
Which is so good.
And there's a lot of movies that are really scary, like the Five Nights at Freddy's movie. Just kidding. I don't know if that's
scary.
We
don't know. It's probably going to be amazing.
But, and those movies, like, they don't uplift me, but they make me feel really scared. And I like that sometimes.
Yeah. But there's sorry, were you about to continue?
No, you got it.
But there's something to be said about a movie that is just genuinely good and tells you that you can be creative even if you think you're not.
Amen.
And I don't know. That's just a message that touches my heart. And that's why I think that this movie is a movie that is so good.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this movie is for adults that kids can also enjoy. It's got such a mature message.
In one of my film classes, we kind of like sat in a circle and we had these like daily questions in college. And one of the questions was, do you consider yourself to be an artist? And of course, this is a group of people who are literally getting a BA, like a Bachelor of Arts and stuff. Like, we were studying film and half of them were like, maybe not. No, yes, kind of thing.
Interesting.
And I remember really being conflicted by that question because I don't feel like a very creative or, you know, like artistic person, but I love art and I love being a part of it and I love like creating things.
Totally.
And our teacher just kind of helped us realize that like the definition of artist can be broad enough to include you, even if
totally.
You don't think that you're good enough or whatever.
Totally.
You can still be an artist. And I
totally.
Think that's kind of the message that this movie has for me.
Yeah. I mean, Emmett's a construction worker.
Yeah.
Construction workers might not think of themselves as artists, but I mean, or let's not say artists, but like creative.
Yeah.
They're totally creative. They have inventive solutions to problems. They're not making a painting or making a film, but they're solving problems and they're creating something beautiful.
Yeah. I feel that way. Like, I work as an instructional designer right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will be like, so you're not in your major? Because I didn't like go to Hollywood and stuff. And I'm like, no, I use my major every day. Like, I'm
totally.
Still creative. I'm still designing. I'm still working in film. It's just not in the way that you want me to.
Yeah, totally. And there's also something to be said about like, you know, with like, let's say like a work PowerPoint, for example. Like, there's one side of it where all of the data needs to be good and it needs to have a good flow. And logically, it needs to, you know, impress and stuff, but also the slides need to look good. And creativity, I can't stress enough how creativity is not limited to artists.
Yeah.
You can be an accountant and still be creative. Like, that's, anyway.
That was a good TED Talk.
Anyway, the only thing anyone needs to be special is to believe that you can be. And
you said it. You said
it. That is the Lego movie. Oh, it's so good. I want to watch it again.
Yeah, now I know. You want to watch it with me?
Tonight?
Yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
What about our hole?
Oh, shoot. Well, we've both seen it, so we can put it on and do the hole.
Yeah! Awesome, McKay. Well said.
Thank you.
All right. Here's what I got. Animation is for kids. And
you cannot joke about that.
Sorry. Animation is for everyone.
True.
And animated movies can be for adults.
Mm-hmm. Like how I think, in my opinion, the Lego movie is.
And animated movies can be some of the like most marvelous, uplifting, just life-changing movies of all time.
They're cinema.
And they can be hilarious too.
Yeah, they totally can be hilarious.
It's not mutually exclusive.
That's the thing about animation. It can be anything. It's not a genre. It can be horror. It can be drama. It can be a musical. It can be a comedy. It can tell
animation
some of the
is
most,
not a genre.
It's not a genre.
It's a medium.
Yeah. So continue.
But that's all I had to say.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what you got from it?
I'm not good at summarizing like you.
Do you want to say anything about the message?
Oh, I said stuff about the message.
Yeah, that's true. I just didn't know if you wanted to add like a summary, but
nope.
Yeah, what you said was great. So
well, I could tell you think so.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know, man. Legos are great.
Legos are great. I love 100% million points. Good job. Thumbs up to those people who have basements full of like Lego cities.
And you know what?
You guys are freaks, but
shout out.
Love it.
Hey, shout out to horror lovers.
Shout out to horror lovers.
Who like to get scared by a book and...
We don't think you're cultists.
Yeah.
Like everybody else.
Yeah.
Like Moms Against Anime Boys.
It's not a real book. Wait, that's not a real Facebook group.
I'd read that book.
Anyway, thank you for listening or watching. Follow us on our socials, gallery_podcast on everything. And
we'll update you on how deep our Minecraft hole gets.
Yes, it will get very deep until we hit bedrock.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you not know what bedrock is?
No.
It's a block that you can't break.
I didn't know that was possible.
Oh, no. That's just...
I have to hit bedrock tonight. All right. Well, bye.
Goodbye.